What's going on?
And I think all of a paragdal pasuk gidal. But right now, Mordechai is having an interchange with Esther to decide what their options are, what the mahalach is going to be.
Oh, he was in the courtyard and he.
So Mordechai sent a message to Esther that she should go to the king and beg for her people's lives, which she should reveal herself to the king, put herself in danger of being taken by the king because she's supposed to find favor in his eyes. She's supposed to go to him, find favor in his eyes, and then beg for her people's life. That puts her in a big danger. It's in a hot spot. And Esther responds to Mordechai that she's not doing it. She doesn't see that that's the way of doing. She doesn't see it. That's what we're going to see in this pasuk. Kol Avdei HaMelech. This is a message she sent with Hasach to Mordechai. Kol Avdei HaMelech, all the servants of the king, the Am and the nation, Medinas HaMelech of the provinces of the king, Yaidim, they know. Asher Kol Ish V'Isha, each and every man or woman, it doesn't make a difference. Asher Yavo Yal HaMelech, who approaches the king. Shayava Yal HaMelech, Elachotza Pnimis. Chotza Pnimis is the inner courtyard, so that means that there's obviously an outer courtyard, and then there's an inner sanctum, the inner courtyard. And anyone that approaches the inner courtyard, Shalai Kari, who was not called, who was not summoned, there was no prior arrangement made. Achas Dasalam is, there's only one thing that's going to happen to them. Achas means there's no other process. Dasalam is, the law says they die. No appeal. It's straightforward. Levad, there's one exception. Asher Yashid Laya Melech, if the king extends to him as Shavit Hazav, his scepter of gold, V'chaya, and then he'll live. If the king doesn't extend the scepter, Persian law dictates that that person is to be put to death. If the king extends the scepter, then they live. V'ani, and I, Laini Kresi Lavaya Lamelech, I wasn't called to come before the king's Eshleishin Yom, 30 days. So she was resisting. She was resisting Mordechai's express wish, his express command, that she approach the king, and she responded in this manner. Now, what does this mean? Like, how is she responding? How is she responding to him? You know, Pashup Shad is that she's afraid she's going to die. That's the push-up shot. She's not going to go because she's afraid she's going to die. There's a flaw in that. That's not, you know, if you think about it, you reflect on it, you'll see that that argument is a bit flawed. Because if she goes to the king, she's afraid she's going to die. If she doesn't go to the king, she's also going to die. And do what? Eventually she's going to have to go to the king.
He didn't know she was Jewish, so she wouldn't be.
So she's thinking that the whole Jewish people is going to die and she'll be the one that's going to, the only one remaining, and that's the reason why she's not going. I think we can give Esther more credit than that.
Awesome,
I mean, I know that's the way people think. That is, when they learn Megillas Esther and there's a 7-year-old, that's the way they think. What?
Also, wasn't it because, like, every time, like, she goes, then, like, he lives with her. So, like, if she goes on her own, then, like, she'll be also her home.
That's definitely a reason why she wouldn't want to go, but there has to be an alternative. Not to go at all. Yeah. All right, so let's go into this a little bit.
So what the problem is over here?
The problem is that why didn't she want to go? Just basic, simple question. Why didn't she want to go? Exactly why did she want to go? What's the real reason?
By herself?
By herself, to Achashverosh, to save the Jewish people. So first, a little background. Like, where did this law come from? Who thought this one up? Yeah. That you can't... Who thought this one up?
Haman?
Yes!
Haman, it was a
lot. Haman! This was Haman's decree. No, that was it. No, that was the other thing. Haman was responsible for the laws that in his view worked in his favor. He didn't want the law that each person should speak the language of the husband of the house. That, you know, that was on the test.
Didn't he also make the law that no one can revoke?
I don't think that he made that. That was what?
Well, that's what I wrote.
That was on the test.
How many days did I have?
I don't know.
I thought we said that he instituted the law that no one can revoke the word of Achashverosh. No one can veto his law. I thought you brought.
I don't
that
remember that Haman made that.
How many days did
I wrote
miss
that on the test?
Okay, so right now we're giving sure now. The test is not part of our reality right now. Now we're learning Teres Hashem. The Targum said that Haman made this up. The Targum says, thanks to laser we have it. Haman decreed by the word of Achashverosh, so he got backing from the king, that no one should come in front of the king to the inner courtyard without permission. And there's no exceptions to this. And another thing, he adds another interesting thing. Who's the one in charge? Who's the one empowered to issue these royal invitations? There's only one way to go there and survive, and that's to be invited. Who's the invitor? None other than Haman. That means that Haman had a decree issued that anyone that approached the king on his own would be writing a death sentence against himself unless they got received a prior invitation from Haman. And we talk about control.
So Achashverosh is
his puppet. Achashverosh cannot see anyone. Only Haman can invite them. Achashverosh can't invite them. Hey, Misa. What Achashverosh could do is he can grant clemency, but he can't invite.
Achashverosh
wants to. So Achashverosh wants to make sure that someone's comfortable to be in front of him. He can't.
If Achashverosh wanted to have Esther come that night, he couldn't say, come.
Esther, not to the Chatzar HaPnimis. There's other places. The Chatzar HaPnimis, this law was the place where the king sat. Haman had to...
in his private house.
Yeah, that's Pashup Shat. The Pashup Shat is, the Chatzar HaPnimis, Haman had to invite the person.
That's where people would go to ask the request for the king, whatever.
Right, if they had an audience. Whether Achashverosh was able to also invite people... From the words of the Targum, it's mashma that Haman's the only one. I wouldn't be surprised if Achashverosh also had rights to invite. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't. Nothing surprises me anymore. But Haman did. Whether Achashverosh did or didn't, Haman did. It's understandable why Haman enacted this law. It's a Tosefta. The Tosefta is a brisa that adds to the words of the Targum. So there's also a Tosefta. These are all from the Tanayim. The brisa says that the 30 days, Esther said, I wasn't called to the king for 30 days. I'm sorry. There's something else I wanted to say first. Just back up a little bit. Hold on. I'm sorry, the Rekeach. I want to do the Rekeach first. The Rekeach says that this Gzeira was 30 days old. When Esther said, it's been 30 days since I've been called to the king, so the Rekeach says, the reason why she didn't see the king in 30 days is because until this law was enacted, so then anybody could come and see the king. You know, she could see the king could see her. There was like a flow of people in and out, and the king was accessible. But when she says, I haven't seen the king for 30 days, she meant that this law which prevents her from seeing the king is in effect for 30 days. When Esther says, it's been 30 days since I've seen the king, the Rekeach says what that means is, it's been 30 days since there's a law in effect that I can't see the king. It's not referring to whether she saw the king or not. I'm sure she was very happy she didn't see the king. And I'm also sure that she didn't take any efforts to go see the king on her own. It's 30 days that I can't see the king. Because 30 days ago, this law came into being.
What does that add?
Well, let's go backtrack 30 days. We're going to see that this... The day that Mordechai approached Esther to approach the king, to beg him, to beseech him, was the 13th day of Nisan. It was right before Erev Pesach. Because she made the party, and then she made another party, and then on Pesach, it was when Haman was hung on Pesach. It was the 13th day of Nisan. You go back 30 days, So then you get to the 13th day of Adar. The 13th day of Adar was a year in advance of Haman's plan. It was a year prior to Haman's plan. Haman planned that the Jews should be exterminated, Rachman al-Son, on the 13th day of Adar. And the plan was formulated a year earlier on the 13th day of Adar of the previous year. So you see that the day that Haman finalized his plans, that's when he enacted this law. And now that you'd given Nisan, the law is in effect for 30 days.
I thought that it was over. That would be the end of it, because if it started in Adar and then it was the 13th of Nisan at this
point. So it means it's the 30th day since the law was formulated, but the law was meant to last at least a year. Why? Because the law was made so the Jews wouldn't approach the king. This law that one may not approach the inner sanctum, the inner courtyard of the king, that was not a general Persian law. That wasn't customary among the Persian monarchy. That was something which was expressly designed by Haman to prevent access to the king, so the Jews would not be able to approach.
A year in advance, they couldn't come to the king.
Well, this at this point we're 11 months in advance, but he made it a year in advance.
I would think
he made it immediately, as soon as he decided which day it's going to be.
He decided on the 13th of Adar. Yes. He decided it later on.
He decided on the 13th day of Adar. It's going to be the 13th day of Adar. A year to the day he started the process. Let's put it this way: the first step. Let's say you're gonna launch a nuclear strike against your enemy. Before you launch the nuclear strike, you make sure that your ICBM missiles are all in working condition, intercontinental ballistic missiles that they intercept nuclear strikes from other countries. Because you want to make sure that your nuclear missiles hit them, and you don't want their nuclear missiles to hit you. Right? So you don't shoot until your defenses are up. Like when you're playing Stratego, you know, first you surround your flag and then you go out. And you could use your own imagination for any other, you know, football. Okay, you know, you got you have your lineman there before you go out for the pass. So Haman, Yud Gimel Adar was the day which he chose that is the best day to destroy the Jews. So he did it in two stages, multi-stages. And he did two stages on Yud Gimel Adar, but they were different years. But they're both Yud Gimel Adars. So the first Yud Gimel Adar is he set up his defenses, that no one could approach the king. And the second, you know, he put up his left hand to block. Yeah? And the second Yud Gimel Adar, he let out his right hook, you know, to punch. You understand? But they both took place on Yud Gimel Adar.
So that would be the reason why Esther wasn't able to go?
That's why she couldn't go, and that's the significance of 30 days.
Well, I would think that why wouldn't since Ahasuerus loved her so much, and he had the power to override a rule, why wouldn't he just say specifically, Esther, I want to see, and she wouldn't apply to the rest?
That question we're going to have to deal with now. That's a good question. You know, that we could answer that question by answering some other truths. And
he clearly was obsessed with her. So.
Yes, he clearly was. So the Tosefta, that's what the Tosefta says, you know, he has this question. She wasn't called for 30 days. There's something significant about it. When the Megillah says she wasn't called for 30 days, that means she really should have been. She should have been, but she wasn't. If it's normal for her not to be called for 30 days, the Megillah wouldn't have to tell us. She's telling Mordechai, there's something, you know, there's 30 days that I wasn't called, meaning that there was something in position during those 30 days that I wasn't called. Not that I wasn't called. I wasn't called.
Haman's influencing Ahasuerus.
That not to call Esther? That's a very dangerous move if Haman would do that.
No, just making her seem bad in his eyes.
I know, that would be very dangerous. That could bounce back.
If what?
Haman not knowing that she was Jewish, I think that he wouldn't want to do a thing like that. Yeah, you know, Haman didn't perceive any threat from her. You'll see, she invited him to the Mishnah. He thought that she hated Jews too. And that's one of the reasons why Mordechai told her not to reveal her origins. The Tosefta says that the reason why Esther wasn't called to Ahasuerus for 30 days is because she was davening all that time that she shouldn't be called to Ahasuerus. Now, we discussed this before. Like, Mordechai told Esther that even if Ahasuerus has relations with her, it's not, you know, she's not doing it willingly, and she doesn't have a status of an Isha Saita, and she's still mutter to her husband. So what's she worried about? And the Tosefta says that there's two components of having relations, two aspects of having relations with Ahasuerus. One is the Isser, you know, to, and you know, the consequences, the Isser, that she's doing something that's Usser, something that's forbidden, and maybe this, you know, there's consequences that should be Usser to her husband. And that she, you know, Mordechai quieted her fear. She's not doing any Isserim, she won't get a punishment. She'll be mutter to her husband. But then there's a Tumah. A Jewish woman, a Jewish girl that has relations with a Gentile, her spiritual status is affected.
She's having relations when she's a Nida.
You know, if somebody, there's a big expensive vase, not a Nida, a guy, he's not Jewish.
I'm saying she's a Nida.
Yeah, but that doesn't add to it because he's a guy. Goyim don't have that problem. Jews cannot have relations.
So it's an issue for a man to have relations with a woman, it's not for the woman to have
issues. It is, if he's a Jewish man, but Achshirish wasn't a Jewish man. It's not usher for a Jewish woman, it's a Nida, to have relations with a non-Jewish man because she's a Nida. It's usher because he's not Jewish. Okay. If somebody bumps you into a priceless vase worth $3.2 million and it shatters into a million fragments, you won't have to pay for it, you didn't do it. It's not your fault. It's not your fault, you're honest, but the vase is broken, or the vase, it's broken. So, you know, Shlomo Alkabitz, he comments on this, that Esther was davening for 30 days, even though she knew that it wasn't Usser, and even though she knew that there would be no punishment, she was just davening because she wanted to preserve her spiritual love. She knows if she has to, she's going to have to. She's not going to kill herself over it. Because you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to lose your life over such a thing. But she was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should save her from Tumah. So she's telling Mordechai, you know, I've been davening for 30 days, and Baruch Hashem, Hashem has been mekabel my tefillah. As you said, Achashverosh is infatuated with her. How does he keep away from her for 30 days? And remember, this is the woman that Bigson and Teresh wanted to assassinate her because they're not getting any sleep. So how does someone, you know, that has that type of attraction to her, for her, not call her for 30 days? There's obviously a higher power. There's a higher power here. This is not a love story. This is Minas Shemayim, Eretz Hashgacha Pratis. This is not a love story. She was davening. She was davening. And Hashem heard her tefillah. And Hashem prevented someone who has a free will. You know, free will. Just, you know, no. She was davening.
How could she go out now?
Yeah, she's diving for so long for such a thing. It's so important. Now you want me to stop and go to him? You know what's going to happen? Tumah? That's your...
That doesn't fit the shot that it wasn't actually her, that it was like a...
A shade? No, it doesn't. Well, yeah, because then she could always call on the shade. You're always on the shade. Yeah, that, you're right. You are right. She went and called.
But it still doesn't fit. Like, this has the same problem with the Pashut Pshat.
What?
That has the same problem as the Pashut Pshat.
Why?
Because she's going to end up dying if...
Because, so, okay, fine. So she stayed. She's now, she's not Tamei. I mean, maybe, but the Klal Yisrael gets wiped out.
Right.
Great. She's not Tamei.
Yeah.
It has the same problem as
So that means that she was timing that there's another way. Or let's look around for another way.
It's got to be another way.
No, there's got to be another way. I don't know, but if she davened and Hashem listened to her tefillah, so then the fact that Hashem listened to her tefillah shows that Hashem doesn't want her to become Tamei. Why isn't, you know, what they're doing now is they're not trying to search for what they want to do. They're trying to search for what Hashem wants them to do. What does Hashem want them to do? And Mordechai won, by the way, if you know. You're going to see that the interchange between them is to look at the simanim, to look at the direction markers, to find out what does Hashem want us to do. So Esther's telling, Hashem does not want me to become Tamei. That's not Mitzvah Hashem. I've been davening for it. Baruch Hashem, I've been Hatzlacha. And you see that Hashem doesn't want me to be Tamei. And Mordechai, he disagrees with her. He doesn't, you know, he disagrees with her. He says, you have to go. Now the Pasha Pshat in why she was saying I haven't been called for 30 days, and why was she mentioning that? I mean, there's a couple angles on that. If one thing is, if Achashverosh didn't call me for 30 days, so then maybe he's not so infatuated anymore. Maybe his chavivus for me has waned. Otherwise, he would have called me. So that's not the mahalach. Because what Mordechai is banking on the fact that Achashverosh will grant Esther her every wish. And Esther's saying, if that were true, if that's the relationship that we had, so then he would have called me more often. And since he didn't call me for 30 days, you see that's not the mahalach. There's another way of looking at things, that Achashverosh always calls me. And isn't it better if he, you know, if I go to him, so then I'm putting my life on the line. But let's say he calls me, so then I can go. So if I go, and then I ask him, so it's a less riskier proposition. So she was saying, he hasn't called me for 30 days, because obviously he's about to call me. It's imminent. It's imminent. He's never gone this long before without calling. The longest he ever went was 28 days. And now, you know, this is a record for him. He's going to call me. So why should I go in? Esther's saying this. Why should I go in and put myself on a matzav of misa, put myself on a, you know, under a death sentence, when he's going to call for nothing? He's going to call me anyway. Or like we said, the other way around. If he didn't call me for 30 days, he's angry at me. So that's also not the mahalach. Let's try and find something else. These are all mahalachim, and they're all true. They're all true. They don't contradict one another.
Does anybody say that maybe he had an issue himself?
Who's he?
Ahasuerus.
An issue?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of what the Mephoshim talk about from his point of view. I mean, there's possibilities. I'm not aware of it.
What does the number 30 represent?
Around
30 days.
What's 30?
Isn't that a month?
It is a month.
It's a full cycle of the moon. I mean, there's obviously relevance here. I didn't go into it. So the Vilna Gaon says that's why she was saying 30 days, because he's probably going to call me. He adds, you know, the Vilna Gaon adds to that. She tells Mordechai, call Avdei HaMelech, all the servants of the king know. Everybody knows this. You know, why is she telling Mordechai that everybody knows this? All the slaves of the king, all the servants, they all know this. Because if it wasn't well known, so then you could always profess ignorance. It's a new law. She just went. She didn't know. She did not apply. You know, she did not apply to her. She didn't realize. You know, that's always the first line of defense when you break the law. You know, the officer stops you and he says, didn't you see the stop sign? So you say, I saw the stop sign, officer, but I didn't see you.
I don't think that would work very well.
Yeah. Enough. But that's what, you know, that's a natural reaction. It's you can profess ignorance. You know, somebody, you know, they put up a sign. You know, the following activity is mandatory in the yeshiva. Oh, I didn't see the sign. I wasn't feeling well. So that's why, you know, Rabbi Greenwald is always so awkward when he makes announcements. He takes attendance. He doesn't want anyone to be able to say that. You're there. You can't say you don't know. Because if you ever wondered why he does that. Because he doesn't want anyone to say that they didn't know. You hang up a sign or you make an announcement. But everyone has to be there. And he takes note of it. This is, you know, ignorance is the first line of defense. Oh, I didn't know. I'm sorry. Kol Avdei HaMelech means that every single servant of the king knows this.
Shouldn't Mordechai know it as well, then?
Mordechai does know it. he wants her to do it anyway.
Then why is she spelling out the whole thing?
Well, what?
Why is she spelling out the whole thing the only way you can?
Well, she's trying to explain to him why she feels they should find another mahalach. Don't you know that? You know, that this mahalach is going to get him even angrier, because not only is she violating the law, but when you violate a law that the king took measures that everyone should know it, so then that adds fuel to the fire. So she's trying, you know, she's spelling out to Mordechai that it's not just an issue of breaking a law. You know, okay, so it's a rule. So I broke a rule. It's a rule that every single person, man, woman, and child in the entire kingdom was made aware of. There must have been a tremendous amount of effort invested in that. So that makes the offense much greater than it is. It's not just becoming, you know, it's not just an avera, dropping in by someone uninvited. Like you're not just defying protocol. And then one final thing on this pasuk, the Malbim adds an interesting note. The end of the pasuk. Malbim. The end of the pasuk. There's only one way out of this. The king extends the scepter. Why is she saying that? Isn't she afraid he won't extend the scepter? What's she scared of? She's scared of the scepter, or she's scared of the death sentence? What's frightening her? She's scared of the death sentence, so she'll go in. She could get a death sentence. The scepter is good for her, not bad for her.
Is the scepter from the Beis HaMikdash?
No. The scepter is good for her. It's not bad for her. The scepter is the way out.
You have to be honest.
Okay, so you're saying that she wanted Mordecai to know all the facts, and she said, you should just know it's not totally doomsday because you can get out.
But we just said he already knew that was the way out.
The scepter?
He knows the rule.
I didn't say that on the scepter. I could say it on the scepter, but it's not. We don't necessarily have to say it on the scepter. It's possible that people just knew about the death sentence. That's the thing which would be important. The scepter? I don't know if that's important for people to know. And I would say that they wouldn't let people know that. Why should people have to know that? People should think they come, they die. The scepter is a secret in the castle, you know, they know about it. But I don't have a proof either way. It's just the fact that everyone knew about the edict doesn't mean they knew about the entire edict. So Malm asks us a question. You know, if she's voicing her fears, why is the scepter part of her fears? So Yosef Dive says that she's being honest. But the Malm has a mahalach. She's saying, either way we're going to lose. It's a lose-lose situation. She said, if he kills Esther, Chas v'Shalom, and Baruch Hashem he didn't, so then Klal Yisrael loses. If he extends the scepter, so then that means that she owes her life to Achashverosh. She owes him! She said, when you owe someone, and you owe someone the most precious thing that you have, that's not the time to start asking them for favors. I owe him. If he calls me, so then he owes me. If I go to him, he has my life in his hands. See, if he doesn't spare Esther, Klal Yisrael's finished. If he does spare Esther, Klal Yisrael's also finished. You can't ask him for anything. That's not the time. She has a different plan. Mordechai didn't agree. He did not agree. We're going to see, because Mordechai saw the Simanim min Hashemayim. He said, Esther has logic. She has Sfaris. It's up, you know, she has logical, she has Sfaris. Esther was a Lamdan. She knew. But Mordechai saw the Simanim min Hashemayim, and he said, even though it doesn't make sense, you know, according to this Mahalach, it looks like she's going to lose either way, whether she lives or die. That's pretty solid. Esther says, whether she lives or dies, Klal Yisrael loses. This is not the Mahalach, Mordechai. Mordechai saw, no, this is the Mahalach. Dafka, this is the Mahalach. And he speaks it pretty strongly. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayagidu leMordechai, is Divrei Esther. And they told Mordechai the words of Esther. Now, we just switched into plural, if you noticed. We just shifted into plural, if you noticed. Until now, it was one messenger. Who was that messenger?
Daniel.
That was Daniel, otherwise known as Hasach. And here, Vayagidu Hasach, Daniel. Yes, Daniel has more than one guy. He pops up as Hasach, he pops up as Ramuchan, according to one view, according to Tysus and Megillah.
Into this
guy. Yeah, so he pops up again. But Vayagidu means, and they told him. The Targum says, Vayagidu leMordechai Esther. They told Mordechai Esther's words. What happened? What happened to Daniel? What happened to Hasach? Let's do the Gemara first. The Gemara says that Hasach didn't go. He was alive and well. He didn't go because the Gemara Megillah says, Ein Meshivan al Kalkala. The Gemara Megillah Daf Tes Vav. I mean, the Romans had this thing that, you know, if the messenger brings bad news, you kill the messenger. I mean, I don't think it's true by Klal Yisrael, but the concept is the same. Ein Meshivan al Kalkala is you don't give over bad news.
So Dinah
Shochanar, what?
I would just send the note.
That's a kasha. It's a kasha. I don't know the answer to that. How do you disobey the queen? We pass in the Shulchan Aruch that if somebody passes away, you don't have to tell the Avelim even. You could lie.
That's terrible.
But Ein Meshivan al Kalkala. You're not supposed to be a bearer of bad tidings. Ein Meshivan al Kalkala. And this was bad tidings. He knew that Mordechai is going to hear what Esther says. This is called Kalkala. This is evil tidings. And he didn't go. That's what the Gemara says. The Targum says, Haman saw Hasoch. Haman was a suspicious creature, among his other virtues. He was a suspicious creature. He sees Hasoch. It says his name, Hasoch, whose name is Daniel. So whether Haman knew it was Daniel or not, he probably knew it was Daniel. Why not, you know? Daniel was not someone in disguise. He was a famous personage. He saw Daniel. And he's going in and out of Esther's chambers. And Haman said something is up. The Targum says he came to great anger. Very powerful. A strong anger. A burning anger. At this, and he killed him. So Hasoch was killed before he could deliver the message to Mordechai.
Is this Targum?
This is the Targum. It's also in the Medrash. It's the Targum and it's in the Yalkut Shimoni.
Who killed
it? Haman killed Daniel.
Just like that?
He killed Daniel in a fit of anger.
Is he mentioned again?
Who?
Daniel.
If he's dead?
Anybody.
Is he
otherwise, he wouldn't.
It's not so far-fetched that Haman killed him.
So now who's going to tell Mordechai? Who's going to bring the words of Mordechai? Who's going to bring Esther's words to Mordechai? It's integral to reestablish the lines of communication.
Wait, so what did he killed him for what reason? Because he knew.
So he saw him going in and out of Esther's chambers, he got angry and killed him.
What did he think?
No idea. You know as much as I do now. He probably didn't know what to think. He knew something was up.
Maybe someone talking to...
Right.
I don't know if Haman really thought so much before he killed people.
I think Haman thought a great deal before he killed people.
You think he did?
But, you know, he killed him. Because he just didn't want people going in and out bringing messages from the queen.
He would think a lot before he killed
people. That means that somebody else... I said he was suspicious. I never said he wasn't suspicious.
Suspicious that they're trying to impact the queen.
Maybe. I think it's most likely. Something's going on. They can't get to the king. It makes sense. They can't get to the king because anyone that approaches the king is going to be killed. So they're going to go around, you know? They're going to go around. It's likely. So he got angry that someone's trying to frustrate his plan. And that person's going to die. And that person is Daniel. He died. I mean, you can add to this. This is pure speculation on my part. But if he knew it was Daniel, he knew Daniel was Jewish, and he got angry the Jewish person was trying to have access to the queen. Like, there's certain things that we could make assumptions about. That he knew it was Daniel. If he knew it was Daniel, and Daniel going in and out to the queen, he probably was watching Daniel the whole time.
Okay? Is it possible that Daniel, since they met in the street last time, didn't want to meet, like said, it doesn't make sense to meet Mordechai again, since someone else?
I haven't seen that, but you know that would be a logical explanation that Esther would switch messengers. She wouldn't use the same person twice. Does that make sense? That makes a lot of sense. So Kadosh Baruch Hu sent Michael and Gabriel, two angels. Michael and Gabriel.
Why do we need two?
It's Din and Rachman. The Klal Yisrael is being judged right now. Din and Rachman. Michal and Gabriel, I mean, in the end, it turned out being very good because Kadosh Baruch Hu saved Klal Yisrael with Michal and killed out the guy with Gabriel. But that wasn't clear at this point, that it's going to play out like that. So Hashem sent Michal and Gabriel, the Malachim, and they told Mordechai. They told Mordechai, that's the Targum.
Wait, how does that work, saving one with one angel and killing the guy with the other? Doesn't killing the guy save the Jews?
Yeah, but there's two aspects to it. There's compassion for the Jews, and then the guy also deserved to die.
One of them was the Malacha mothers?
It's two meters. No. They didn't die with the normal Malacha. Malacha mothers is when somebody dies a natural death. When somebody's killed in a war, you know, because of an einish, because the Goyim were killed in this war, in the ultimate war, the Goyim were killed as a punishment because they're trying to kill the Jews.
How do you differentiate between an einish and
dying
something
dying before
that's
one's
natural?
Time?
How do you know?
There's a certain amount of, you don't always know, but in this case we do because the Torah tells us that they were killed out because they rose up against the Jews.
So an einish is not punished with the Malacha Mavis, it's punished with something else?
It's a different mahalach from Misa.
It says different. It says
but Karach, it was a mahalach amavas.
Karach, the ground swallowed up and ate them up. That's not pure unadulterated.
I know,
that's not pure adulterated mahalach amavas.
See, it's Yitzhara.
Yeah, I use Dictyrus.
Since Yitzhara, and Yisata, and the mahalach amavas, the Yitzhara is first tricks the guy, then he's Yisata from the guy, and then afterwards he kills him for the Zaynish.
In any case, you know, the process of dying is not the same by natural death and when it's an einish brought upon because of one's actions, and there's an interplay of midas hadin. Midas hadin is the midah of retribution. If somebody dies a natural death, it's not necessarily because of retribution. That's the amount of time he has. It's not retribution. So the midah of din plays a role in the death of those that rose up against Bnei Yisrael. The Rav Shlomo Alkovit says something very insightful on this pasuk. It's a small pasuk, but there's a lot in there. Vayagidu l'Mordechai, if you remember from the previous pasuk, pasuk Ches, we said Vayagidu, the sherish of the word lahagid is gid. A gid is a tough, strong, harsh sinew. So Vayagidu is sometimes used when you're telling somebody something that they don't want to hear, or if you're rebuking them. The Shlomo Alkovit says that when the Malachim relayed Esther's words to Mordechai, they spoke to Mordechai harshly. Because they didn't understand Mordechai. Mordechai's Mahalach, Mordechai's understanding, his grasp of the situation, was even higher than the Malachim. Because even the Malachim didn't understand what's going on here. Even the Malachim didn't understand what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants, what's expected from Klal Yisrael. The Malachim did not, they didn't give their haskama to Mordechai sending Esther to her death. Rabbi Shlomo Alkovit says this. I mean, we don't understand anything. We're just accepting what he says at face value. He said the Malachim don't understand people's thoughts. They don't understand Machshavos Bnei Adam. And they didn't understand what Mordechai was thinking of. They didn't understand. They didn't grasp the depths of Mordechai's plan, so they spoke to him harshly. They said Esther feels it's not right for her to go. What's going on here? There's numerous machleksim throughout the Megillah that Mordechai is espousing a particular point of view that nobody agrees with. Not to bow down to Haman, he was a loner, he's the only one. And not only did they disagree with him, they held that he's bringing disaster on Klal Yisrael. And until the final nace, it wasn't clear that he wasn't.
But he was still considered.
Mordechai told him to leave the Suda. They said, you cannot leave. What about Shalom Malchus? Mordechai said, leave the Suda. Leave the Suda, don't bow down to Haman, walk into a situation where you're going to die. And the Gdalim didn't understand him. They didn't agree with him. And the Malachim didn't understand him. He has nobody. Maybe Eliyahu HaNavi was on his side. It sounds like Eliyahu HaNavi was on the same page as Mordechai. It's a good place to be. Because he communicates with him and he tells him he's the one that, you know, looked like. Why did I say that? Because for all appearances, it looked as if the Gzar Din was sealed with blood. There's no way out. And Eliyahu HaNavi gave Mordechai the precious insight that it was only sealed with clay. So that means that Eliyahu HaNavi went one step further. And Mordechai was one step further. That's the reason I said it. It sounds like they're on the same page. Which is a good thing. Let's go on to the next pasuk. Vayemer Mordechai. When Mordechai said, Lahashav al Esther, to respond to Esther. Lahashav means to go back to Esther. Al Tadami ben Avshek, don't imagine. Dimyon means illusion. Don't create the illusion. Tadami means to create the illusion. Limolit beis hamelach, that you're going to escape because you're in the palace of the king. Mikol Yehudim, from all the Jews. That you alone are going to be left alive from all the Jews. You're going to die along with everybody else. And the Targum says that Mordechai said this to the Malach Michal and Gabriel, because they're the messengers. So he told the two Malachim to tell Esther that she shouldn't create the illusion that she's in relative safety.
What is that? As we just said before, Mordechai couldn't possibly think that Esther...
Well, that's what we're going to... We have to say something now, right? I mean, that's definitely good. That's the Pasuk shot. Mordechai says, are you afraid of putting your life in danger? You're not putting your life in danger. You're in danger already. He tells Esther, he said, that's not a cheshbon. Esther said, I can't put my life in danger. Mordechai says, you're not putting your life in danger. You have nothing to lose. You only have what to gain. That's how Rashi learns. Rashi learns Mordechai's cheshbon. A couple points on this. The Von der Gein says that Esther had a good time in Alpi Taira. The Gemara Shabbos Daf Dal Amar Alf says, "Ein Eimer Chatai B'Shvil Sheyizka Chaverecha." You know that Gemara? You don't tell somebody to do a sin in order that his chaver should be zeicha, should get out of it. And he was talking about Radias Apas. You know, somebody puts some bread to bake in the oven. It's going to bake on Shabbos, and the guy's going to be chayv chatas. And you could take it down before it bakes, but taking the pasta off of an oven is an issa d'rabbanan. But if you don't take it down, he's going to be chayv chatas. So we're going to discuss it, the relative merits.
Why can't you take pasta off an oven?
It's similar to a malacha. It's an issa d'rabbanan. It's because it takes a certain amount of chachma to take it down. Taking it down, it's not so. No, you're not talking about taking the pan out of the oven. What they used to do is they used to make a dough.
They used to flap it on the wall.
You want to get it off, you know, perfect, like really nice. It's called Radias HaPas, and it's similar to Malach HaRabbanah Sitzasa. It's not Asad HaRaisa. So you say, all I got to do is be Avon Nisad HaRabbanah, and my friend won't be Chayiv HaChatzah. I should do it. The Gemara discusses the relative merits. And the Gemara says, Ein Anam HaChatei B'Shvil Sheyizka Chavecha. You know, whether the guy himself should take it down, it could be he himself could take it down, but you should take it down. That he should be saved from Aver. You don't say it. So Esther says to Mordechai, Klai Yisrael is going to get saved. She said, but I am not in danger. So I'm not saving my own life. So, you know, and that's not the reason why, not because, you know, we have this infantile idea that she's trying to save her skin. But she's saying, since I'm not saving my own life, I don't have the right to do an Aveira, because going to the Achashverosh is doing an Aveira. I'm going willingly. So it's Gilei Raya's, it's a morality.
Putting yourself
in a Gilei Raya situation. And it's not to save my life. It's to save somebody else's life. So even though it makes a lot of sense, but it's Aser. The Gemara says it's Aser. It makes a lot of sense. I should, you know, Klai Yisrael's life is a lot more valuable than one person's life. And it's me against Klai Yisrael. But she says, I'm willing to do it, but I'm not allowed to.
So what about everything that she's been doing up until that point? That wasn't sin.
She never went to him. There's no sin whatsoever.
Oh, because she was there.
She
now
was
she's
taken.
Actually
going.
She's not allowed.
She's
not allowed to.
Now you understand.
So she said she's not allowed to call because it has to do herself.
She's not allowed to do an Avera if she's not saving her life by doing the Avera. Uh huh. Good timer. So Mordechai told her she's making a mistake. She is saving her life because she's not safe in the house of the king. So this is Mimela. The Von der Gein says Mimela. She's not going to. She's not putting her life in danger and being over and avera. I'm saying she's not putting herself in spiritual danger. She's not going to transgress to violate the Torah in order to save someone else's life. She's doing it to save her own life. He says because if you think al pidin, he's saying that you don't have a hetter to do it because you're not in danger. So you're not allowed to. Do an Avera if you're not in danger. He says, you are in danger. So you're allowed to do an Avera to save your own life.
She's in danger because the din is at all of Klai Yisrael.
Yes, including he says, you're going to die also. So we've just transcended, you know, the mundane over here. You know, this is a halachic discussion. Not that she feels that, okay, so I won't go. I'm not going to do it. I'm uncomfortable and I won't die.
Why would she?
That's not what she's saying.
Why would she think that she wouldn't die?
Because they don't know she's Jewish.
Yeah,
Pashut.
Yeah, but it's Hashem making all the Jews.
That's what Mordechai said. But you know, each and every person, Esther and Mordechai, had their own perspective of what Hashem wanted from them.
Mm-hmm.
And Esther felt that since she escaped detection until now, so then her life is not in danger. If her life's not in danger, she's not permitted to do an Avera. Not she's not willing. She'd definitely be willing. She'd be willing to do anything to save Klal Yisrael, but the halacha doesn't allow her to.
How is she going to die if
What did Mordechai mean when he said she's going to die? Mordechai saw the Semana Min Shemayim that's exiled in Klal Yisrael. and it's exalted on all of Klal Yisrael. And if it's exalted on all of Klal Yisrael, then it's on her too. And if it's exalted on her, then she's going to die. Then she will die. How? There's many ways a person could die. Right, she could just not wake up. He saw that there's exiled din, and not a single, there won't be a single survivor in Klai, so she's just not, she will not survive. Memela, that's one thing that the Vilna Gaon says.
This is exiled din so that the world be destroyed, basically?
Yes, yes, because of Klai, yes. That's how bad it was. Klai Yisrael was mamish at a level that if they'd be continue, they'd continue, then the world would self-destruct because there's no point anymore to having a world if Klai Yisrael is like that. Mamish, you see what's going on here? It's a,
yeah.
Where did we get to? Which, where are Pasek?
Yud Beis.
Yud Gimel, right? All right, the Mordecai, the Vilna Gaon continues in the next Pasek. We'll wait for that. There's a Al Tadami V'Nafshech. Al Tadami V'Nafshech. There's one thing, you know, Purim is called the Great Masquerade. That's the reason why we masquerade on Purim. We wear costumes. Purim is a great masquerade because like everyone, anyone besides Mordecai saw the entire world wearing a Purim costume. Huh? Mordecai is the only one that saw the reality. The world was wearing a Purim costume. Everything pointed to one thing, and Mordecai saw that it was all sheker. It's just a mask. And we've discussed many of the details already. Mordecai pierced the mask. The Muhammad of Ben Yisrael, throughout all, especially then, but throughout all the generations, is to see behind the mask. Society projects certain values forward. There's something called the way we do things here. There's a way that things are evaluated. There's value systems. There's social systems, and we live amongst it, and it affects the way we perceive things, and it clouds our judgment. And it influences our value system and the way we make decisions. And it's all sheker. Mordecai was the only one that saw the emes. Mordecai saw it. He broke through everything. Amalek has a kayach. Amalek is a master illusionist. Amalek, we said it's mikra. It says, Amalek is mikra. Amalek. Their standard that they're really around is happenstance. Ashkacha baderach, karkas kam baderach. Things just happen, which is the opposite of ashkacha pratis. And they have the theory of evolution. Could you think of a more preposterous thing? It's just silly, but it has found worldwide favor. It's lasting for generations. What is the advantage to the theory of evolution? Not the sense to it. There's no sense to it. What are the advantages? The advantages to those that believe in the theory of evolution is things just happen. And people want to believe that. So they embrace something which is ludicrous because they want to believe it. That's Amalek. Shkocha Pratis. We say Shoshanas Yankov Tzalav Asamecha. Everybody is happy. At the end, everyone is happy. Because everyone sees Tchelis Mordecai. You see Mordecai's Tchelis. Did you ever wonder what that means? We sing it. Shoshana Shankar Tzalav Asamecha. Beroisim Yachad Tchelis Mordecai. Because we all see Mordecai's Tchelis. What is it about Tchelis? Tchelis is you're trying to project the reality with Tchelis. Tchelis is Daim Eliyam. Do you know? The color of Tchelis is similar to the sea. Yam is Daim Elirikia. The color of the sea is similar to the firmament. The Rikia is Daim Elikisei HaKavod. We think Rikia, that's Kisei HaKavod, that's Malchus. Tchelis is the emes that we see, the emes in the world around us. We see the emes in colors. We see the emes in the sea. We see the emes in the skies. And that you know, instead of the sea and the sky covering over the emes, which is what, you know, the Avodah Zarah do, they worship the sea. Neptune, Trident, you know? We use it to come to the Yemes. Tchelis Mordechai means that they're so happy that Mordechai, of all people, finally saw the Yemes, and he saw the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in creation. Dimyon. Illusion. to be used for emes. You compare the color of tchelis to the sea, to the sky. That's one kind of dimyon. Dimyon means, you know, creating this whole. You compare things and you project. You know, you project based on things that you see around you, and dimyon could also fool you. Mordechai said to Esther, "Al tedami benafsheich." Tadami means don't base your decisions, don't come to conclusions based on what things seem like. Because you're going to base it on what things seem like to the eye, so then you are going to be making a mistake. There's a masquerade. There's an illusion. A mulek, a chesed. The master illusionist, and what appears to be going on is not what's going on. He said you have to look at it with the dimion of Tchelis Daim L'Yam, Yam Daim L'Kir, Kisei HaKavod. And you can't look at anything in the natural order. Anything which works naturally, that's just saying naturally, if I go to Akashvash, I'm going to get killed. So naturally, I'm going to try and do something else. Mordechai says, you do anything naturally, that's dimion, that's illusion, that's sheker, that's false. Al tadami benafshe. Esther, raise yourself above. Raise yourself above the natural world. Your mahalach, the way you want to approach things is the way things appear. Al tadami benafshe. Don't look at things the way they appear. Go beyond them. Go beyond the appearance. You don't see blue? Don't see the sea. Don't see the sky. See the keys are covered. L'malah b'dach ha-teva. Al tadami benafshe. And that's Shoshana Shemek, Solov HaSamecha. That's why we're so happy. Because Baruch Hashem, there's one individual that he was able to see Emes. So we're very happy when we see his tchelis. Kasha, how you doing, Mahim? Ken, yeah. There's a man of Zeh.